Now, how are you seeing Richmond on the bounce back factor as well? Where are you seeing the Tigers and a few of those teams outside the 8 at?
Yeah, I like Richmond if you can tell me that Edwards is going to play 20 games and Martin's going to play, you know, 18 to 20 and Tom Lynch is going to hold up. So it's all physical for me with Richmond. If you can tell me that their core group of players, Prestia and Lambert, aren't going to be injured like they were this year, then absolutely. But it's a big if when the core of your group is starting to get, you know, middle 30s or certainly low to mid 30s. Just on the Tigers, there was a big feature whilst I was on holidays in the Herald Sun with their high performance manager. He answered a series of questions, and one of the answers sort of pricked my interest in relation to one of their players. And, you know, how Richmond go this year is going to be dependent on, you know, how a lot of their younger players come through. And one of those is Sydney Stack, who I see as... Now, he was in that super draft, really. I know he wasn't taken in the top 10 with Rosie and Walsh and Bailey Smith, but he's in that situation of his career, and he's equally as talented as any of those. And some of the footy that he's played across halfback, was so impressed with his first year, and he's lost his way a little bit for reasons that we know of. But this is the quote on Sydney Stack. Stacky is still learning the caper. He's got some work to do with consistency of preparation. I'm not going to mince my words there. He's got a bit of work to do. He's a young player learning about his preparation. He has fantastic traits in his explosiveness and he's highly skilled, but he needs to work really hard on his conditioning. So then I went to Sydney Stack's social media and Duano, for the youngsters out there, TikTok's the big thing. And he is a massive player in TikTok. He's quite creative and he gets on there and he's heavily involved in the social media and that type of thing. There's a bit of old school in me about this, and I'd love to just, whether someone has done it at Richmond or not, or whether the new era is to just to let the individuals be individuals and embracing social media and all of that. But there's something in me that says, Sydney, put your social media away, put your ridiculous TikTok videos away. If you watch them, they're cringeworthy. They're embarrassing. Until you get a kick, I want to sit down like, I don't know, Tim Juniver would have done to you in the early days if you were carrying on like this before you'd achieve really anything. Like, he's achieved nothing, Sydney Stack, but he has the capabilities to be a very, very good 200-game player in this game. But for those Richmond fans that have seen his social media videos, am I too old school in the fact to think that I could sit him down, shake him, ban him almost from TikTok until he gets a kick and has some success? Or is that not the way that it goes now? I'll be interested in that process and how the Richmond fans and his teammates, by extension, feel about his use of social media.
So 0433 98 11 16. I love it when you go off on a tangent. This was unexpected, but I'm going to enjoy going down this road for a couple of minutes. In fact, if you've got a thought, jump on the ENS open line. Don't waste it on a text. By the way, we will read your text out. But the open line number, 1300 736 736. Old blokes like Kane Corns and I are telling young people, put the Insta account away. So are you going down the same road with Jamari Eaglehagen, who likes a bit of Insta action?
Very
as well?
Similar. Very, very similar with Jamara, and he likes the TikTok action as well. Now if it's Shane Edwards and he's doing it, of course, you let him sort of do it, because it's not... Like Dangerfield, he uses social media exceptionally well, and it's not uncommon for him to be on social media on game day. It doesn't affect his performance. I reckon this distraction is affecting performance, and when your club is telling you you're not preparing adequately and you've got lots of work to do with your preparation, then you look at all things about how I can not waste this opportunity. Like, De Goey is wasting his opportunity with the talent that he's got. Sydney Stack is young enough to click into gear and still make the most of his career, Stevie Johnson style. He can absolutely do that and be a very good player. But just recently, I think it was yesterday or the day before, he went onto his Instagram and he said, I'm not getting off TikTok. I think he should. 0433 98 11 16.
Well, there's a couple coming through on the text that are with you. With you, Kane, cringe. And that's with a little bit of an Instagram hashtag, cringe. And so you're okay if it's an Instagram picture of, hey, I'm here at the Australian Open Tennis. Here's me with Pat Cash.
I've got to show you some of these videos, stuff like that. I've got it because I'm not on TikTok, but I've seen people have sent
is
them.
Is it socialising kind of stuff? Is it?
it's time consuming as well. Like this is there's a lot of effort going. It's not just.
But that's
take
what
a
they
snap,
do now.
Put it. I know
that's
that.
What they
but
do.
I think it's a distraction for him, and his own club is telling him. I mean, that's what they're saying publicly, that he's got a he's got a lot of work to do. Imagine what they're saying privately about his preparation and his endurance and his skin folds and all of that. You can read between the lines here. What I'm worried about is he is wasting what is... he's as talented as any of those Walsh and Rosie and Smith and Keane. He's as talented as all of them. I reckon he's wasting it.
Some big news to go out with before Kane Corns goes on that 15K jog. Cornsy, Adelaide senior coach Matthew Nicks has been reported on the Adelaide website, will remain at the helm until at least the end of the 2024 season after signing a two-year contract extension. What do you make of that?
Well, I don't get the advantage to signing coaches before their contract expires. So he still had this year to go. I don't get the benefit of doing it now as opposed to waiting until halfway through the season. I mean, the record's not great. We know that they're rebuilding and all of that. And you've got the Alistair Clarkson situation looming. I would like to see how the season played out at the halfway point. It's not as if another club's going to come and poach Matthew Nicks now. So perhaps the stability they like, they've had a lot of young players re-sign as well. And I'm a fan of Matthew Nicks. I think he's going to be a good coach, but I'd like to see that confirmed with wins and losses before you extend. It's not a massive one. I don't think it's going to be a huge mistake, but I just would have liked them to shown a bit more caution and perhaps waited until the halfway point of the year before they re-signed him.
So are the Crows under the rule, I think if you're getting AFL handouts, then you can sack a coach and only have to pay him out 6 months in advance of where he is right now. Are the Crows going to have to pay the whole lot of this out if they do move early?
I think the Crows are okay. I think they may be one of the fortunate clubs that sort of run their own race and have their own funding. They're obviously a very commercial club, so not heavily reliant on the AFL like some other clubs are doing. But look, he's been impressive publicly, Matthew Nicks, and I'm just not sure about Adelaide's list and have they selected the right players for this rebuild. It's all well and good to rebuild, but to do it successfully, you need to pick the right players. And even this draft, they're just small. Adelaide just pick a lot of small players. So we'll wait and see. But he's a man of really strong character. He's been impressive. I just would have waited till the halfway point of the year.
In the air. And it's gone straight to Rachin Ravindra. So the ninth wicket for India and the ninth wicket to Ajaz Patel. Can he get all 10? Oh, that's gone very high. Rachin Ravindra takes it! So it's all 10 for Ajaz Patel. What a day for him! Oh, it's been outstanding.
All 10 wickets for Patel, former Black Caps skipper Brendan McCullum, to join us in a matter of seconds. Keep your texts coming through on the Temper text machine, 0433 98 11 16. Quite a few coming through from people either texting in the traffic or sitting alongside someone who is in the traffic. To answer your question, Kano, how bad is the traffic in Melbourne? Is it as bad as social media is saying? It's worse.
It's worse.
Well, I think it is worse. Traffic is bad in Melbourne. Right now, I'm in it. And another one, traffic, horrific, worse than it's ever been. That's from Buzz. And I've got to ask you, while we're talking cricket very shortly, Kane, because the biggest cricket story here, not just the selection of the Australian cricket team, but the swapping of this test between Adelaide and Perth, the second test for the fifth test. Are Adelaide into that swap or do they have no choice? How's that going to play out?
No, I wouldn't have thought Adelaide are into it. So back page of the Herald Sun today, the West Australian government has launched an astonishing bid to swap its test dates with Adelaide after being told the fifth test in Perth has been scrapped. No surprises there with their quarantine rules. I love the arrogance of the West Australian government. One of their sports ministers, Tony Butthire, says it is a no-brainer to swap the Perth and Adelaide tests. Why is it a no-brainer? What's the benefit to Adelaide for doing that? There's still the threat that the South Australian government are going to close their borders altogether. They'd be hoping to get the test out the way as soon as they possibly can. Tens of thousands of tickets have been sold. So Perth are absolutely dreaming. Either give the second one to the MCG and play it under lights, or give it to Tassie, who deserve it as well. But Perth, for the second year in a row, are going to miss out on a test due to their stupid demands on border controls.
That's the editorial I was after. Of course, you can trade a really vibrant second test for a dead rubber fifth if you want, but yeah. No, maybe Kane reckons that's not such a bad, not such a good idea. Black Cap skipper Brendan McCullum was a superstar in his day. He's here for the all-new Kia Sportage, which has been unleashed. If you haven't seen the Kia range, including the Stinger and the Sportage, drop down to your local Kia dealership. Brendan, welcome to the program. Great to have you on.
Thank you, boys. Thank you. Nice to join you.
Oh, Baz, take us through it, because we've trying to been having ideas about where this feat from Ajaz Patel ranks in terms of, you know, what is the most difficult thing you can do as a sporting individual. He's taken 10 wickets in an innings, only the third person to ever do that. Where does it rank in your eyes?
Well, it's potentially the single greatest individual achievement in the history of our sport for our country, because, you know, result aside, and unfortunately it's going to be in a losing cause, it looks as if I guess you've got to put into context that there's been 2,500 test matches. Now, say you average out, say, 3 innings, that's 7,500 innings, and only 3 times has it ever been achieved before. And Ajaz Patel, probably an unlikely candidate, was able to achieve it. And the fact that it's in his city of birth as well. He'd gone back there, and it's almost written in the stars, lads. Just a truly remarkable performance, and you know, you need some luck to go your way for that too, because you've obviously, you can only bowl half the overs. So just a truly remarkable performance. I couldn't quite believe it when I was watching it on TV, actually. He got 7, and I was like, nah, surely not. And then he got 8, and I was like, you're kidding. Yeah. Then 9, I was like, go on, son. And then the last one, I actually jumped up off the couch, and my wife's looking at me going, what are you doing, mate? And I was like, no, this is a big thing. So it was huge.
It was huge. Now, he's not a young man. He's 33 years of age. He's played 11 test matches. What is some of his story, and how did he land with the Black Caps?
Well, he was born and raised in Mumbai, and then they made their way over to New Zealand, his family, and you would have heard him talk. He's got a very thick New Zealand accent. He's very much a Kiwi. He's just been plying his trade domestically for a long period of time. I guess the fact he's only played 11 test matches is more probably a throw towards the conditions that we are normally presented with in our country. A lot of the time we don't play a spinner, and if we do, it's only to one. So limited opportunities at home, but then ever since since he's been in and around the scene on the road when we play in the subcontinent conditions, he's one of the first picks, and he's done a remarkable job for us in a short period of time, and he's had some success where he's bowled New Zealand in favourable spinning conditions to some test wins abroad in places like Abu Dhabi and the UAE, shall I say, and the like. So look, he's been a remarkable find for us, and the guys love him. You could see when he got his 10th wicket what it meant to all of them. He's just a good team man who just goes about his work, and he doesn't necessarily look like an athlete, but he's every bit of one when you think of what he can do with his left arm orthodox.
What's the reaction been like? Like, for you to say that it's the greatest New Zealand individual cricket feat in New Zealand cricket history is a massive call, and it's obvious. But what's the reaction in your part of the world been like to this feat?
Yep, it's been pretty much that. I guess it's tinged slightly with the performance of the rest of the side. It's been a very disappointing test match for New Zealand, and aside from Ajaz Patel, and there'll be some questions which people want answers to, because we are ranked as the number one test team in the world, and we've been pretty meek and mild in this test match. And we passed up an opportunity to try and chase down a test win in the first test. So those questions will be asked. So there's always that little sort of murmurings in behind the scenes. But in regards to Ajaz's performance, I think it's sheer admiration and delight that he's been able to achieve this. And we've got to witness it, because we'll probably never witness it again in our lifetime, a New Zealand player achieving such a feat.
Phenomenal. What's the DRS is always controversial, isn't it? I'm not sure they've got it completely right. There was one where he got Kohli for a dark LBW. You couldn't quite tell whether it was bat first or pad first, and it was given out after they went upstairs. There was another one also It might have been, not sure the batsman he got, but didn't offer a shot outside the off stump and it spun back a long way. They went upstairs and that was given out. Is the DRS system working?
Well, first and foremost, the umpiring's been woeful right throughout the series. Nothing short of shocking. It's and there's some pretty good umpires on display as well. But I guess that's the extreme conditions that you're seeing and the spinning and the bouncing and the variation and bounce as well. It does make umpiring very difficult. So I'll throw that slight disclaimer in there for them. But the decision-making has been really poor and the DRS has had to cover a lot of that decision-making. You made mention of Virat Kohli's dismissal. That wasn't out. That's at the bat before it's at the pad, and even with the benefit of the DRS, they still weren't able to get it right. So we got a saying in the coaching world that you can't coach stupidity. Well, you can't handle stupidity when it comes to people making those sorts of cock ups as well. But that aside, India's been dominant in the series, and we had our chances in the first test. We passed up the opportunity to try and achieve something special by going for the safe option. And, well, I'm a believer in fortune favouring the brave, and unfortunately we weren't brave enough, and hence we're getting our comeuppance.
So when we have this kind of thing happen, Brendan, in Australia, we sort of weigh it up. What was the biggest event ever in Australian sport achievement? America's Cup, Cathy Freeman's Olympic gold in Sydney. What has to be beaten in New Zealand sport? What's the biggest sporting achievement ever in New Zealand sport, and where does this rate with that?
Well, first of all, I didn't realise you guys still competed for the America's Cup. Well, that's good to know that you're still dining out on that one way back in the day.
Nice.
I think it's very difficult to try and compare various sporting, accolades or achievements. In cricket, I definitely hold it up there as probably number one individual achievement. Across other sports, I mean, you look at, say, Michael Campbell winning the US Open. Crikey, what else have we got? We've got some brilliant sports people throughout our country. But, yeah, we've actually had this on our own show on the Baz Nizzi Breakfast over here on SCNZ. We've had this very question. Where to rank our top 20 individual sporting performances? So I'll have to go back and have a look at those. It's on our podcast as well. So I'll have to go back and have a look at those. But for me, Michael Campbell's achievement was up there. But, you know, this is remarkable because of the unlikely sort of nature of it, and the fact that in 2,500 test matches over the whole history of international test cricket, only three people have achieved it, and that one of those is now Ajaz Patel.
And I did hear that you were on your way to 10 wickets in a row at one stage, weren't you? You were one wicket in?
Yeah. That's good. I'm pleased you brought that up. I do have a test wicket. My brother played international cricket too. He was a spin bowler, Nathan. I call him Mattress because he's a bit soft. But he never actually got a test wicket. So he played a lot of one day and T20 cricket, but he never got a test wicket. So it's always good banter around the Christmas sort of period when we just recollect the one test wicket that I got as a wicketkeeper batsman, and the fact that he was able to achieve none. So yeah, I'm pleased you brought up that. Thank you. Caught and bowled.
Love it. Caught and bowled, was it? Love it. Hey, before we let you go, we got the Ashes starting on Wednesday. You'll be keeping sort of an eye on it, I'm sure. Who do you like?
Well, I was actually meant to come over and cover it for Channel 7, lads, but just with all the border restrictions and quarantines and all the like of the various governments, it made it almost impossible to be able to cement that. It was a bit unfortunate, but I'm well across it in terms of the preps and that. And look, I think Ben Stokes' inclusion in the England side balances the ledger slightly, and as does all the off-field dramas that you guys have seemed to find yourselves in. But I think Australia, I think they'll be too strong. I really do. I think they'll win the Ashes, and all the pressure that's been on Justin Langer of late. When you put a World T20 championship and then you put an Ashes victory on the back of that together, I think that all of that pressure will certainly will subside. So, look, I think you guys will be too strong. Also, I've noticed that the Big Bash is underway. My Brisbane Heat take on the Thunder tonight. So, up the Heat. Look forward to following them over the summer as well.
Good man.
Nice play. Great to have you on. Brendan, let's hope you can get on a plane and get here at some stage in the near future. We are still in the situation where you wake up and you Google the news just to see if you can go to the shop. So it is a day-by-day basis we make our decisions. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ed. Take care. See ya.
Heaps happened on the weekend. So much to get to, so little time. One of the big events, though, was at the MCG yesterday. Melbourne fans finally getting a chance to celebrate with their team. And Simon Goodwin finally getting a chance to have a chat to the fans. Kano finally got to say what he wanted to say, which was fantastic as well.
He did, and I had shivers down my spine when I actually heard him say it. It was I only saw it on social media, but I think a lot of clubs are going to be following suit after they win premierships in the coming years and doing something similar.
Gary Pert's been good enough to join us for Keezer, struggling with back pain. Now's the time for Keezer. A few of them might be struggling with a little bit of back pain. I think a few of them had their Christmas party barefoot bowls on the weekend. Cheerio to all the Keezer staff out there. You're doing a great job. Gary Pert's on the line. Welcome to you, Perty. Great to have you on.
G'day, Dwayne.
Good day.
Oh, look, it was a fantastic day to see over 30,000 D supporters all happily sitting there singing the song and, you know, celebrating with the players. And as you said, Goody and the coaches were there. It was a celebration of the whole club.
Purdy, I love the crowd watching along. They knew the result, so there wasn't the anxiety that you'd usually get watching the grand final. They were almost cheering before a goal was kicked. What was it like in the atmosphere? Take us through that.
Well, it's the perfect grand final, isn't it? You're only sitting there with Melbourne supporters. You've got no other supporters from another club hassling you. You know the result. As you said, they watched the whole four quarters. They were cheering and screaming in the last quarter like it was the first time they'd seen it, but they were all commentating when the goals were coming up. So it was pretty well the perfect day, and they got right into it. And then afterwards, when the players come out, the whole MCG erupted. It was as an amazing day.
You got any merchandise left?
No, we've certainly sold a lot, but I think it's fantastic because I, you know, so many Melbourne supporters, you know, we make the finals, we make a grand final, and I think they looked around and said they don't have a lot of apparel and merchandise over the years. So they've all rushed out, and the best thing is we just sell out continually of all our kids' range because all the kids are coming back, and they were everywhere yesterday and getting photos with the cup, and that's really important for us as a club to be rebuilding those kids coming back after the recent success.
So financially, what's it done, Purdy? Like, can you put it into a figure for us or into context?
Well, I think this year it's simple to do because we're at best going to break even after being, you know, smashed by COVID again. But we'll announce a profit of around $2 million. So Wow. We see that's a direct result of the finals and the premiership. And I reckon it'll add probably another couple of million dollars to our financial result next year because we'd expect, you know, the membership is going really strongly. And I think we're going to have some pretty big blockbuster games. So, again, that's always great for clubs when we get the crowds coming back to the MCG. So it has a substantial impact.
And, Purdy, it is nice for the fans to be able to actually grab hold of, touch, feel, shake hands, get a selfie alongside the players. You, back in your day, were playing in the days when I think the fans could still run on and pat you on the backside whilst you're running off. There seems to be, in recent times, a bit more of a distance put between fans and the players. We don't tend to have or haven't been able to have those Sundays after the grand final win, the family days like we used to have. So it is nice that this opportunity still exists for fans to actually get together with players side by side and kind of feel part of it more than we have for a couple of years.
Yeah, there's no doubt the fans love it, but also the players do. Is you know, I know that the players, when we won the premiership in Perth, they all said they couldn't wait to get back to the MCG to be there with the supporters. And they were interacting and mixing with the supporters all day. And they really enjoyed it. And you would have seen from social media that they were there with their families for the first time. Because, of course, in Perth, there was only 75 of us. So to come back, have the kids, have the families and friends with the players, this was their first chance that they had to reconnect as a group as well. And so they had a fantastic day, and I got some amazing messages from the players afterwards. So the supporters loved it, but the players were exactly the same.
Big cheers for the players, as you said, but the star of the show, there was only one, and it was that man, Neil Danaher.
Neil Danaher, yeah, he got a standing ovation, and I don't think there was a single person in the 30,000 that didn't have a tear in their eye. He was up there, and he was part of our formal presentations, and Simon Goodwin got up and gave him a huge big hug, and the crowd went crazy. But, you know, he's a really important part of this club. He's talked to the players over the years. He's got a really great connection with them, and Goody loves being around him. So, you know, he was really important, and to have him up there with David Meeks, and of course the supporters got to hear from Nathan Jones and Neville Jetta, who retired. So all of those special moments, we wouldn't have got at a normal grand final. So we wanted to make sure that the supporters had moments they'd remember for the rest of their lives.
Is it somewhat of a full stop on it? I mean, because things move so quickly and players back to training, and now you've got to defend the premiership, which is even harder maybe than winning one.
Yeah, I think in the big formalities, it was definitely a point that we're all working towards as a club. But the Cup will continue to be on tour, and as you know, it's travelled all around Melbourne, regional Victoria. It's now, as of tomorrow, I'm taking it up to Sydney, and we'll be taking it to our interstate supporters. So the Cup will continue on tour, and therefore, every time the Cup rolls up, there'll be some sort of celebration. But for the players, they're pretty clear. They start pre-season today, and their minds are focused. And I know Goody's going to have a big session with the players and staff to reset their heads for our next campaign, for our next premiership. But as a club, I think, you know, while the Cup's on tour, there'll still be an enjoyment of that. And that'll keep on going until people don't want to see the Cup and they've all had a photo.
And any time soon, we'll find out about the new Gosh's Paddock home where the Cup will reside, Purdy?
Well, they've put a big fence around the oval as of yesterday. So we start digging up the oval and turning that into an MCG-sized ground, which is a critical element. As you guys know, we've been training for many, many years basically on a junior football oval. Now for us to be on an MCG size oval by the time we start the season next year, that's our first step. And then by the time we get to that point, hopefully we're a lot further down the track with the state government and the AFL on our broader facility. I've seen the designs. It looks magnificent. And you know, that's progressing, and it'll be worth the wait in the end.
And round one, the grand final rematch. How do you feel about that, opening up the season? I think it's terrific, and I guess you'd just be encouraging all the Dees fans to back up the truck and buy the memberships if they possibly can.
You know, we'd love to see everyone just completely fill the MCG. As soon as we won the premiership, the next morning I rang Travis Old and said, mate, we owe it to the Melbourne fans, to for both clubs, the Melbourne supporters and the Bulldog supporters, to replay this game in Melbourne. I think it'll be a huge crowd. We'll unfurl the flag and make it, you know, something really special. But these are the sort of things we want to be part of. This is a club now. We want to be part of the blockbuster games. We want to be filling the MCG on a regular basis. It's a really exciting time.
So should the grand final rematch always be the season opener from now on?
Well, I love the idea of it, because already you've got the players talking about it. You've got the supporters excited about it. The clubs of the two teams, you've got the whole pre-season to be excited and focused about a big clash to kick off the season. So, look, I love the idea of it. This year it was really appropriate for us to do it because we were forced to play the interstate grand final, but I'd love to see it every year.
A couple of texts coming through on the Temper text for you, Purdy. When's your BNF?
So we've got that on the 17th of December. We've got 1,500 people, you know, filled the place there and be coming along. And again, that's always a special event for us, where we said to the supporters that instead of just having an online best and fairest straight after the season, we wanted to wait until we could share it with the supporters again. And the earliest that's been 17th of December. And like I said, 1,500 people there, and we'll hand out all our awards.
Nicely done. And Luke Jackson was a player who wasn't able to be there yesterday. He's in his home state of Perth. When do you expect him to return?
Well, you know, we've been sort of day by day reading the border restrictions and the ebb and flow of that. And we want Jacko to be able to spend that time with his family, because once the season really kicks in, we've had, you know, a lot of restrictions on the movement, the interstate movement of our players. So Jacko will be back, I'd say, straight after Christmas, but he's training very hard. He's on a very tight program over there. But, you know, the border restrictions have been a complication for our Adelaide and Perth players, and we've tried to work with that.
Purdy, great to have you on. In a word, because we're out of time before you go, who does win your best and fairest? Who was your best player this year?
We'll have to find that out. I'm not really sure. That's why I'm so excited about the 17th.
Got an opinion? Who was your best player, you think?
Oh, look, it could be Christian Petrarca. I thought Maxi Gorn was fantastic. Clayton Oliver's got to be right up there. I think there'll be four or five players that'll be within votes of each other. So it'll be way too close for me to guess at this stage.
Great to have you, Purdy. Always fantastic to have you on. Congratulations on your season and your day yesterday. Gary Peart joining us.